What's good, y'all? It's that time of the year, and we've got bills to pay. So if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some new merch. If about 10% of you listening right now donate $10 to support the show, we'd have enough to cover an entire year's worth of cost of production. Over the years, I've been very intentional about turning down ads for things that didn't align with our values, so you don't have to listen to us talk about gambling or boner pills or any of that other crap. But that's only possible through the support of you, our listeners. So we've created some new ways for you to support. And again, if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some of our new merch. And of course, don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Now let's get into today's show.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move! Oh,
LeBron James with no regard for human life! 12 seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang!
Iverson. Against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up, what up? Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name's Nick. I'm with my guys, Rohit and Mike, to talk some kicks, to talk a little rocking and copping, to talk about some SB Dunks, some regional releases, all sorts of stuff. But what's first? First and foremost, what's good, fellas?
First is probably rocking and copping, knowing how the regional structure of our shows go, but... You know, sometimes we like to throw a curveball in there. I'm doing well. Mike, how are you?
I'm good. Like I say, I'm just trying to figure out if I'm getting my butt kicked by allergies or not. But you know what? We here. We making it. Can't complain.
As a once famous man, now disgraced man, said, Mama, we made it. And by making it, we made it to Thursday evening. It's Friday for most of us. And hopefully, listener, by the time you get this, it's Friday. If not literally, maybe in a mental state of mind where you can just be like, you know what, I'm going to take a random Thursday off and spend it with three of my best friends in the sneaker industry.
Exactly.
Good way to do it, man.
All right, who wants to start with rocking and copping?
I'll go. I got one in front of me. I got my rocking right here that I'm super excited because I've been itching for this one since we saw all these releases for the 81. And there it is.
Nice.
We got the 3SSB or 3 Stripes or 3 Stripe Select Basketball Camp PE they released in a low. This one I think honestly the best, one of the best, if not the best one to release from the 81 line. I like just the colors, the tie-dye motif they put on it. So that was the last 81 I'm gonna buy, probably, unless I can get my hands on the Year to Dragon or Year to Snake ones. That's my rocking and copping right now. I mean, it's probably gonna be the same for a lot of people out there, but if I can get my hands on a What the Kobe, I would not be upset.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
What you guys got?
It's funny you mentioned that, Mike, because I'm kind of scared to go into the Discord because I feel like it's a bunch of people calling in every single favor they've done in the last year to get extra raffle tickets for the What the Kobe. And so for me, that is also my possible cop. And as for rocking, I got a pair of the Fly Go Ease, which is probably my favorite shoe, and I've come to the realization that I'm going to try to make that my Converse in terms of that's my beater pair going forward, and then when I need to stunt on these hoes, I'll wear something nice. But if you see me out in the streets, it's more than likely going to be a Fly Go Ease. Nick, how about you?
Is that Fly Go Ease better than that Rejuvenate?
Rejuvenate might be as rare as the What the Kobe 8s. I have not seen a pair anywhere, and this is how I know the shoe has high expectations. They have not bumped that down to employee pricing for us yet, so it's still a cool 70 for us, regardless if you're inside the berm or outside.
Rocking for me has been the New Balance 998, kind of old pair from years back.
Nice.
Copping, yeah. I mean, what the Kobe's, man. Like, that's like one of those elusive shoes from the past that, yeah, of course, it would be nice to get a pair. So, not saying that I'm in any position to, but...
No, Nick. Remember crossed. What we did with the bread
I'm
one?
I'm in the same boat.
What did we do with the bread one?
Yeah.
We manifested that for you. We're going to try to manifest the what the Kobe's for at least 3 out of the 4. And I don't mind being the loan representative if I still get to pay full retail as opposed to resale prices.
Look, man, I'll take a friendly pair delivered to the door. I mean, because right now I probably shouldn't be buying any sneakers, but we all have those like, ooh, I want it.
Yep. All right. So regional releases, the Kobe 8 Dodgers colorway, right? Releasing down in LA at Undefeated, supposedly, right? So Kobe 6, sorry.
Yeah.
What do we think about that?
I mean, I can't like the Dodgers, if you just didn't know. you don't
got to say that for me, you know? Like,
you know, it's one of those, like, I entered for Robbie. Yeah, I didn't get him, so sorry, Robbie. I'm sure he figured it out already. But it's cool. I like how he did it. I mean, it's clearly Dodgers are a very polarizing team. It's not one of those, it's very regional. I mean, I'm sure you have your fans sprinkled across the states, but very regionalized, and it makes sense for them to release it what they did. But I was confused because I thought I heard that they got pushed back at one point, but then people started getting them delivered to their door. Is there another release coming that got pushed back? I just wasn't sure what was happening with that.
No, and I think for me, what I'd always heard was, as is now, I guess, the trend for all Kobe days, which is April 13th going forward, you were always going to get three offerings. Mm-hmm. And I think last year we got the Philly 4, the Italian Camo 6, mm-hmm. and then the Venice Beach 8.
Venice.
And this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And this year, I believe the proposed lineup, now granted, everything I've ever seen in terms of proposed lineups always came through the magic social media network that is Instagram. I never saw anything official, so maybe the joke's on all of us for believing Instagram, but that's a topic for another day. But the rumored lineup for this year was almost what the theme, because you had obviously the what the Kobe 8s, the aforementioned uh-huh. Dodger Blue 6s, and then I believe the uh-huh. third shoe, which is really interesting to me because I don't know if just because Nike continues to retro the original high top version of the 9s, trying to make it a thing is going to make it a thing. I don't think it is, but I believe the What the Kobe 9 was the third offering. And I guess if I had to rank it, I would almost say that because I have no baseball allegiance, unlike my two co-hosts, I was equally salivating for the Kobe 6 Dodger Blue as I was the What the Kobe 8s. Now, granted, I am a baseball agnostic, and not only that, fun fact, and I guess disclosure, Chelsea FC, my favorite soccer team, their owner is also one Todd Boehly of Los Angeles Dodgers. So subliminally, I want to share that success with the Dodgers that I do with Chelsea. But I don't know. It's really weird because I think we are only going to get the What the Kobe 8s. Now, one thing I will also say is the amount of equipment and apparel that they've done this year to highlight, to amplify the What the Kobe's is also something.
It brought me back to my champs day seeing the apparel. You know, you got the full fit that would come with the whatever shoe that was dropping. Like, you don't see that as much anymore. They have what the shorts, what the shirts. I'm like, man, I mean, I don't think I can successfully pull it off, so I would just take the shoes and wear a very neutral outfit, but I respect the game for anybody putting that whole outfit on.
I just like the fact that everything is reversible now, because, I mean, what's the old adage about snakes, right? They have a second skin, and it's one of those things, the more we kind of look into it, I feel like everything going forward from the Kobe perspective has to be reversible. And if nothing else, you could make the reversible one side be the 8 and the other side be the 24. So there's layers to the marketing genius. That is my apparel plan.
Someone paid a man. He has ideas.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, yeah, I was surprised to see all the extra stuff, too. Like, it just seems like, I don't know. It's a whole other can of worms, but I don't know if people are spending that kind of money on anything right now. So, like, that could be something that was planned prior to, you know, kind of the last 6 months or whatever it's been, that it could be a heavy lift for you know, the brands to sell through a lot of this stuff. But I think that's also kind of the interesting part about, like, regional releases and how potentially, like, if that trend of regional releases kind of spreads into other products and other thought process, you know, don't want to go too far down the tariff rabbit hole, because we all know these tariffs are basically BS anyway. And
where's our board?
Yeah. and really out there, they're just happening so that people will cave and, you know, just kind of go back on their morals, essentially. But even if they do go into place fully, or if they are in place fully, it's probably going to be something that's forced upon all these big companies to think about, to talk about, to decide, hey, how do we address this? Can we, you know, like, Kobe is obviously popular in other countries. Yeah. So can we produce in countries that, you know, like, the consistency is always difficult. And I know that, like, big brands don't want to, that's why they don't shift their production from country to country. But it's an interesting kind of side topic to all of this is, like, are we like, is sneakers set up to be, I don't want to say ahead of the curve, but, like, maybe a little bit in the right direction, because we've kind of been in this, like, regionalized programming for the last year or so, give or take.
Yeah.
I mean, I think not only that, Mike, and I'd love to get your take on this from the perspective of, okay, this current what the Kobe release that's coming on Sunday, like there was no way that even if they wanted to pull the curtain back on, let's say, the basketball shorts, the jersey, or the aforementioned $100 basketball, I think it's that bird has flown too far from the nest to kind of rein it back in. But it will be very interesting to see what, let's say, next year's Kobe Day lineups look like, because I think they have to now think about that, because previously, 2 years from now or 2 years ago, I don't think they had this in mind as they were kind of rolling out the plan for it. Mm-hmm. But going back to the regional plan that Nick also talked about, we're seeing it from also, I wouldn't necessarily say this as a diss to the Asia One, but the Asia One is, I wouldn't even say that well publicized of a debut sneaker. I mean, we all know it's coming. We all have high hopes for it. But the fact that they have done a three-stop rollout in regionalized locations before the Grand National on May 6th is interesting. And I think, listeners, if you're not paying attention, we got a rollout in Tampa. We got a rollout the next weekend or the next day in South Carolina, where Asia Wilson went to school. And then I believe the third day was Las Vegas, where she currently resides and plies her trade with the Las Vegas Aces, which I always thought that should be a more, maybe this is me being sexist, I thought Queens might have been better, but anyway, that's a topic for another day. I think if nothing else, they've kind of learned from the fact that we, as a podcast, always cite the infamous Devin Booker Book One launch, where we all really like that orange pair, but then lo and behold, it only dropped during Art Basel in Miami, which at that moment, I don't think, and maybe there's a basketball fan who can correct me, I don't think there's any connection that I can think of with Devin Booker in Miami explicitly. So that really didn't make any sense.
No, there wasn't a connection. It was just a place where Nike would like to do their activations every year. They saw they have success with really rare options and really, again, regionalized options. So they took advantage of that moment like they've done with other shoes. And just the wrong shoe, I think, for that one. But, you know, talking about the regionalization of these drops, but also talking about being able to read the room in a sense of what could possibly happen with the tariffs in place if they do hold or whatever happens. I think that kind of answered our question earlier, Ro, when we talked about, hey, it typically is three sneakers. We typically get three Kobes. But now, hey, you know what? We got to adjust for, hey, you know, typically we're 12 to 18 months out, but when did that clock start and stop? Like, you know, how far out are they? So to spread these Kobe releases and not have to get hit with this, you know, huge price tag, or maybe they may have to move everything to all production to Vietnam or Indonesia if they've caved on whatever's going on, instead of, you know, move out of China, whatever it may be. But now let's stretch these out. Let's give them three release dates so we can stretch the Kobe love out over the year, as opposed to hit them all at once. What if we got jacked this price up to from 225 to 275, and we, you know, let's give them more of what we already produced and already have here in the States, so we don't have to worry about an extra charge being put on. That's kind of, as we were talking, that's where I thought, like, oh, you know what, let's stretch it out to see, you know, give the consumer as much as we can before crap hits the fan if it does.
I mean, I think the Kobe line is kind of an anomaly, though, right? Like, Kobe's China fan base is massive.
Extremely.
So they don't really need to think about it too hard. I think that, you know, the Asia release, like the spreading out the Asia releases, like probably the best release I can think of in the last, you know, at least for a signature shoe. I mean, coming off of, you know, I guess we're a couple years off. They won in 22, 23. She was MVP in 23, right? So like,
she was MVP last year, wasn't she? Because did she three-peat? Or did she three? She has three MVPs, right? I can't remember the years. Yeah, I thought it was last year.
Was it last year? I can't remember.
We can fact check. I believe it was last year. Keep going. We'll look it up.
Yep.
So last year was the third year then. 24 is the third year. But like going back to the Devin Booker thing, you know, like Devin Booker is just not playing up to anybody's expectations, anybody's standard. You know, the whole team has been suffering. Like, I thought the Chevy, you know, obviously being a car person and having a show called Cars and Kicks, like, that's a cool shoe release connection, sort of.
Definitely.
But it's also kind of, like, tired and forced, you know? Like, I don't know that, I just don't know if there's a connection there between like, you know, Devin Booker and, like, old school Chevy kind of fans. And maybe I'm wrong, but the rollout of everything about the Book One and all that stuff, it's been, I will say it's been on par with like what the shoe, with the wow factor of the shoe. It's kind of just been like a six, you know, like it doesn't get you excited. It does, you know, like it's not a bad looking shoe, but how many people that want to wear an Air Force One are like, I'm going to buy a book one instead. It's just not, there's not a lot of crossover there, and he's not a big enough star on or off the court in order to get people excited. Maybe the first few years in the league, he was, you know, more exciting or whatever, but you know, I think that's the interesting thing about like the rollout aspect of the Asia one is like, if they do hit all those spots, right, and you activate her core audience, then you're doing something that will ultimately roll into a much bigger opportunity. Granted, yeah. Like, I think they should have given her a shoe 2 or 3 years ago, at least, compared to some of the other players who are out there. But it is what it is. It's a tough sell on that side of the business, I think.
It is a tough sell. But what I will say is the best way I would describe the mythos of the Devin Booker book one in terms of the storytelling is disjointed. Because to your point, Nick, first we saw something about his love of hiking, right? Which was the Moab collab. That wasn't a collab. That rhymes. Nice. Yeah.
Well, the one we just got a year after they showed it, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Then we had a pair which was an homage to his dog, Haven, if I remember correctly.
Correct, yeah.
So he's a hiker that likes to go with, or rather, he's a dog fan that likes to go on hikes. Then it came with the Forrest Gump collab, which, to my knowledge, there isn't any sort of connection to Devin Booker and Forrest Gump other than the fact that the shoe itself lends itself very aesthetically to the initial Cortez that it's seeking inspiration from. So everything just seems like that old adage of pasta where it's like you're just throwing stuff to see what sticks on the wall and then just doubling down on it. Now, that being said, it's interesting because I do think Nike basketball, when that second dawn appears, it's going to be around the fact that it's going to be a female-led revolution from a basketball perspective. Because my big prediction is we're looking at it from the perspective of, from a storytelling and from a customer resonance perspective, the Sabrina one is probably the best shoe Nike has right now. With all due respect to LeBron, KD, whoever else has something like that, it always seems that the Sabrina one, which is, depending on who you ask, either a tasteful representation of the Kobe aesthetic and ideal, or a blatant copy. And there's a reason why that type of shoe works. Now, I will be very interested to see, because I could make the comparison that if we are comparing the Sabrina one to the Kobe, I would feel that the Asia one seemingly borrows most from the KD line. But what do you guys think? Just quick thought on that.
Yeah, that's a good... I mean, I haven't seen, none of us seen the Asia in hand, but I can see where you're coming from thought. You know, your thought process on how they kind of play off of each other. It's just, I think the Asia's doing a good job. Just again, a kind of a slow burn. They're not going to burn us out really quickly like they did with the Booker, because the Booker was first, I can't get the 1-on-1. And you're going to flood me with these very mediocre colorways. And they're just giving the quote unquote good stuff now. And this shoe has to be at the end of his life cycle. We haven't heard anything about a book two. And Asia, on the flip side, gave it to her core fans. You got Bam Adebayo wearing them on an NBA floor. So you have the proper exposure.
Yeah, there you go, Mike. You dropped her a sec.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. So you're getting the proper exposure, and you actually have a release date for the pair everybody's talking about, that pink pair, which everyone's like, ooh, I want that one. And I've heard great things about it being enhanced. They have completely course corrected from the mistakes they made with the book one, I think.
And not only that. Oh, go ahead, Nick.
So I think the opposite. I don't think that shoe looks anything like a KD. I think that shoe looks way more like Nike women's basketball history than anything on the modern side of things. Because like a lot of people said, it looked more like an Adidas aesthetic, right? Like a little more flowing, a little bit faster, really? A little bit smoother. And that's absolutely right. But that doesn't mean it looks like an Adidas shoe. It means that if you go back and look at like the Cheryl Swoops shoe, the Dawn Staley shoe, the shoes from like 98 to like 2002, the women's basketball shoes from like era, like they're calling it the A1, right? The A1.
Yeah. A1
looks like it's an evolution, a continuation of Nike basketball, Nike women's basketball, in my opinion. And I don't know if that's what, you know, what the team was thinking when they brought that back, but there's not a whole lot of people outside of like diehard sneaker people that would even feel that connection. So it's not something they necessarily would even want to market, because like even doing it the way that they're doing, and it's like, this is a new shoe. It feels new. It doesn't feel, you know, like the Sabrina felt Kobe-ish. And like, if we're being honest, any low-ish top basketball shoe that looks fast is going to feel Kobe-ish at this point, right?
That's like all of them, yeah. That's every shoe they come out with at this point is all, like, got this Kobe feel like.
Yeah, but that's, like, just – that's. I think that's less. That's more of a subconscious thing for all of us that are sitting here looking at Kobe shoes day in and day out. And it's like, how far can you go without, you know, throwing a backwards swoosh on it, without throwing some sort of foamposite material, without going super crazy in one direction? And then you alienate the fan base of these athletes, which is exactly what you don't want to do when you're trying to elevate the women's game, you know, with the product. So I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting, and I'll be curious to see how it all plays out.
For me, what's going to be interesting is we mentioned the rollouts, and specifically the Devin Booker one felt a little bit disjointed. Now, I think that what Adidas did with the AE1 is almost a masterclass on how you want to roll out new sneakers, because of the fact that they didn't flood us with the market. Every one of them felt unique. Every one of them got the proper room to breathe, and meaning I didn't get this one, but I'm going to get the one next week, because there was what felt like months in between new colorways. And then also, we mentioned this on a previous episode, the now what I consider to be an iconic approach towards the advertising, right? You guys saw the fact that he had another poster dunk on somebody, and lo and behold, within 30 seconds, we saw Ice-T and that actress whose name I swear I will remember for the next time we have whatever posterizing moment AE, or rather what Anthony Edwards has done in the AE1. But that is very cool. And if these brands are being honest with themselves, that less is more ideal or aesthetic is going to be what they should follow, especially with the debut colorway. Like, I could kind of understand why you're going to flood the market once you have an established presence like a Kobe or a LeBron or a KD, even to a lesser degree. But this is where we jokingly or colloquially referred to that early part of the teens as the Three Kings era between Kobe, KD, and LeBron. I think we're about to enter the Three Queens era, where it's going to be Caitlin, it's going to be Asia, and it's going to be Sabrina. And the thing is, they now have a playbook that they can kind of run things back again and drum up a brand new generation of fans that doesn't necessarily look like the previous generation of fans, but is going to have that same investment into these players. And I think that's where the dawn is now going to start for Nike basketball again.
I heard someone talking the other day. It was through a sports clip on, I think it was Instagram or TikTok. I can't remember. And it's probably not the best example to use, you know, yet and still, for our point of the conversation, just how you said it transitioned to the women's silhouettes, or, you know, they're here. But they were saying that basically they were over some AAU teams, and the big thing for a minute was Ja. His shoe, because good performer, decent price. They're saying a lot of, because you're not seeing Ja in a court as much, or the team's not performing as well, and Ja's doing Ja. They've actually, a lot of those kids have transitioned from, they're like, I don't want the Ja. They say they see so many Sabrinas on an AAU court. Kobe's always going to be there. That's a given. But when you talk about new shoe, they see, if it's not a Kobe, it's a Sabrina. So if we're already seeing that on the AAU side of things for the men, they're like you said, they're going to push in a new era of a shoe, which is going to be led by, or female led, I should say.
So I have a few thoughts here. First, Ja just frustrates the shit out of me, because you just don't need to be doing the stuff that you're doing to celebrate. The guns shit is not cool. And, like, it can't be cool for the kids, because if you get suspended from the league, you're no longer cool. They don't see you. So if you're doing it to be cool to your gangster friends or whatever you want to call it, you're throwing money away. You're throwing your footwear career away. Like, the longevity of his footwear line will be a couple more and that's it. Even if he turns out to be a great athlete, he'll end up leaving Nike. He'll end up bouncing around and nobody will remember much of it. That's really unfortunate, because he's fucking incredible on the court. But, like,
when he's there.
When he's there. But, like, that whole thing is a can of worms conversation. The other thing is, like, thinking about the AE1, I think, I don't know if you guys saw, but, like, Steve Stout posted that they did that with Reebok in 2003.
I did see that. I was like, wow, I didn't realize that they had pulled this formula for somewhere else.
So I'll pose that question to the audience and to you guys, but I want to jump back a little bit, but, like, is it stealing? Like, he claims that the ad agency stole the idea, and, like,
Nick, if I can ask the dumb question, because there is an inevitability that somebody's listening to their very first episode of the Sneaker History Podcast and they want to know a little bit more about sneaker history, what exactly was the idea that was stolen?
So literally Reebok had an ad that was essentially like guys dunking on people and having the, you know, the crime scene investigation and all that stuff. Like, it's very much like spot on. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about it. Like it's one of those things. If I create, I mean, I've created stuff that's been, I've pitched things, let's say, to brands that then I was told no, and then they did it a couple of years later. Yeah. So like, I understand the frustration of that, but like, we all play in the same sandbox. So inevitably our castles are going to look very similar no matter where we go, if we're in this sandbox. And I don't mean that to take away anybody's creativity or, you know, IP or, you know, like unique things are very hard to find. But when I think about that as a commercial and I think about like the idea behind it, the concept of that is kind of like saying, you know, you can't have a CSI Miami because there's a CSI New York. You can't, like, look, people are obsessed with crime TV. That's the whole point. Like the whole point is putting something that is not sneaker related, not basketball related in front of them and them being like, oh, I get it. And not to say that like that idea wasn't great 22 years or 23 years ago, whenever it was that it was first presented with Reebok. Yeah. But I think it's just an interesting conversation. And I would love to know from the audience and from you guys what you think about that. Let's go there and I'll come back after that.
Sure. I mean, I think it's so old. Now, I mean, and not to discredit what was done in the past, because I love watching those old commercials, and I'm sure it served as inspiration for somebody like in that room when they're creating that whole campaign. I will say that the whole campaign wasn't based on that. Like the whole shoe campaign wasn't based on the CSI or crime scene unit. So I'm okay with it because it's so far removed, and I'm sure it took some heavy or some deep digging to find that before someone like, oh, we got to the second or third commercial of that before we even had the reference brought up. You know, it's like a rapper. Oh, the reference track is blah, blah, blah. Got you. We don't want to steal, but it could have been someone who's paying homage to that. Because don't forget, Adidas did own Reebok for a time.
And just to be clear, this would have, timing-wise, this would have been before Adidas purchased Reebok. So they wouldn't have had access to this. I mean, who knows? It could be in the Reebok archives and they could have pulled it. But this is kind of like Nike selling ankle insurance for Kobe. And then And1 also like did everything about breaking ankles beforehand. And1 probably did more about murdering somebody on the court than anybody else. I mean, in 98, sure. 99 with the trash talk.
I'll give you an example of this one, right? So first of all, what we loved about the Anthony Edwards rollout was the fact that for the first time in a long time, both Mars Blackman and Michael Jordan were one person. So everything that we do is an homage. Everything that is old is new again. So if you think that only one movie can be made about cops fighting robbers, then my friend, I hope you only know about the movie Heat and not the subsequent ripoffs like Den of Thieves and whatnot. So there's that component. It's really funny because when you mentioned this, the first example that came to my mind, and it's a little bit of a deep cut, was Reebok had the answer commercials with Jadakiss, if I remember, for the 5 and the 6, right? Yep. Do you guys remember when And1 did something with Kevin Garnett and Jadakiss's partner Styles P? So, like, not only are we borrowing the same concept, we're breaking up hip-hop groups. So, like, this sort of thing has always happened. It's just a question of, does the product speak for itself? Does the campaign speak for itself? And if it does, then we really don't care if we're borrowing it. Because ultimately, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. We've all known that since our English teacher told us that in the 4th grade.
And the dribbling commercial from Nike came after all of that, which is what I used for the beat under our intro for the podcast. Like this is what I mean about we're all playing in the same sandbox. And Steve Stout has done some amazing things in and out of sneakers. Like he's been very successful. I think I was just more put off by him being the type of person that's like, that was my idea two decades ago. Like, he doesn't seem like that type of person normally. I don't know him, never met him, never spoke to him or anybody associated with him that I know of. But it was just a weird thing because I feel like creative people know that ideas get thrown around and bounced around within communities all the time. And people run with all sorts of ideas, good and bad. It really only matters when somebody else runs with an idea and it becomes really successful, which is what I think happened with the AE1. I guess I'll transition away from that, but like ask a question because I've been thinking about this a lot recently and I'm probably going to write something about this so I can get the newsletter going again. Mike did a review of the AE1 that he picked up. That colorway is beautiful. But you said in your video that you're kind of done with the AE1 and I'm not. Like I'm kind of over the idea of a new shoe having to come out every season. Like this shift in my mind is not like, I want to see the creativity come out. I want to see the you know, the output. I want to see the progression. But what I think I've been thinking about a lot is like, could we have both? Could we have, maybe it's not the AE1. We know there's an AE2 already, you know, kind of locked and loaded, but that's a bad pun for
at least it wasn't John.
An anti-gun.
Because for all intents and purposes, Ann Edwards market corrected or took Jaws' shine, his aesthetic.
Oh, 1,000,000%.
Basically what was a rated R aesthetic, Ant was smart enough to keep it PG-13, and that's why he is riding the wave of popularity now, because he did the one thing that Ja couldn't, which was moderate his persona, is the best way I could put it.
Yeah, and maybe he has better people around him or something. Remember, like, Anthony Edwards was like paying women that he supposedly,
oh, that's still going, like, on. Apparently, he just paid like $1.8 million in like child support.
So it's
to
crazy.
Your point, though, Nick,
but like, that's not talked about the way his
success
is. You
know why it's not talked about? Because anytime Ant does something, his signature move isn't him sucking a thumb, symbolizing a baby, the way Jaw shoots a gun.
That's true. That's a good point. And also a good, I don't think any of us need to see that. I think that, especially on the court, that's probably not healthy anyway, but going back to the signature progression, right? The lineage of signature shoes. Obviously, Ant is going to have a decade's worth or plus, you know, like if Adidas is smart, they'll give him a lifelong contract and we see him doing cool shit for the rest of his career and beyond. On the flip side, if Nike was like, you know what? The book one isn't selling, but we already have all this. We already can make the shoe. All we need to do is flip up the colors and tell better stories. They have time to build up that product line in a single form with the book one. And I get that the name and the book and the chapters and all that stuff in theory would be cool if you had a wall of books, whatever. But if they were to go down that direction and say, like, we're going to commit to doing this shoe and continue to build on the legacy of the book one, like that becomes a way for all of us as consumers to get excited about the colorways that like Mike was saying, he doesn't care about those colorways. Like, nothing's been appealing to him. So like, if they lean into it more and make it something that's an ongoing thing, they save a little bit of money, especially if there's a tariff conversation involved.
Yeah.
And they also potentially give a chance for Devin Booker to like elevate his own game on the court, get back into his, let's say, old ways of playing. And I think you could potentially build something out of it. I'm not saying like beat a dead horse, but like sometimes maybe you could take it in a different direction, but beyond the formulaic approach that we've had in footwear for so long now.
Two things, because I got to get these ideas off my chest and make somebody a millionaire. So as you were talking about Ja and Ant, like, how funny would it be if Nike and Ja pulled the Pusha T and made fun of the fact that Ant is a bad dad and like tie it back to the story of Adidon? And then secondly,
I mean, I'll be here to watch it. I'm not gonna lie. I would sit back and
no, that was just for you to
enjoy the chaos.
I just thought you would enjoy that hypothetical. But going back to what we also talked about, the disjointed storytelling, right? Like, make up the narrative that when Devin Booker was a kid, the one thing he loved more than basketball was reading. And then you can say, you know what? He was a big Roald Dahl fan. So here's a James and the Giant Peach colorway. Because if we know something else about Devin Booker, is his love of peach-colored shorts from Hooters. So there you go. That's a integration right there. You could do Harry Potter. Like, the thing is, you've got the book one. You've got the concept of chapters. You just decided to zag when everybody expected you to zig. And now come back. But sorry, I just had to get those two ideas off my chest.
What was hurting the book one is Devin Booker's lack of personality. You know, he's not, I mean, we know he has the old cars, but did he show up to car meets? Does he do things like with the car? You know, it's like, we don't know anything about him, which is the killer.
Here's the thing I will say about Devin Booker that I knew about him. And granted, to your point, Mike, I didn't know it the same way that I knew Kobe immigrated over from Italy, mm-hmm. or that LeBron loved, like, his first car was a Hummer. Well, the most pertinent thing about Devin Booker's personality to me is, remember when they first announced the Olympic team and everybody's initial thought was, hey, this is great. It's an all-star team, but who's going to do the dirty work? Like, who's going to set the pace?
I know exactly where you're going.
And Devin Booker had that famous tweet of, I'll do it. Like, make him the everyman. The everyman that's also an all-star.
Yeah. I mean, is it too late for that? Is it too late because they built
him
up too?
I don't think that it is, because to Nick's point, and I agree with it, like, what is the overarching narrative around Devin Booker that we can't stop right now? Like, that is a runaway train, the way we associate Ja with guns and and with big, beautiful women. Like, there's nothing about that. That so why not? Yeah. Like, make the reading thing. Make the fact that he wants to be the everyman, but he also realizes he's one of the top 10 people in his position in the world to do this one thing, which is be a lethal sharpshooter.
Shout out to Lethal Shooter.
Yeah. We can't get
it's
away
mustache.
From
mustache. It's like having a weighted vest when you do workouts. Like, you think it's got a little bit of extra adage and it's making all your points sound more pertinent, but then you're like, nope, this is really weighing me down.
To see it, I mean, if they could again course correct with Book, I bought one of the shoes just to see. Cause I know I trashed it because, like, you know what? Let me actually try it. I'm okay with being wrong if I actually try something. The shoes, not bad in concept and build and feel. It actually is a decently comfortable shoe. Looks decent when you wear it out with, like, off the court. So they have something there. Like, the building blocks are there, but you just don't have the Ant. You know, you don't have the Anthony Edwards to push that forward, because no matter what, like, Devin Booker can score 60 tomorrow.
He scored 70. He was the first one.
No, I got you. But he can score 60, he can score 70. But if Ja bodies somebody with one dunk and scores 12 points, who are we still talking about? Ant. So it's just, they have to build that personality. He has to be open to, like, whatever they choose, whether it's the books, whatever, he has to be open to embracing and opening up to his core audience with that.
I mean, I think you hit a like sweet spot in that conversation too, right? Like, is he even a car guy? Is he out there, like, don't get me wrong, if you've got millions of dollars, everybody's a car guy, right? You're going to buy nice cars. You're going to pay somebody to make you nice cars.
Guy. You've got the money.
Right? Facts. Exactly. You could be a book guy. You could be a chapter guy. You could be a Harry Potter guy. Like, it's up to you.
You could be Harry Potter at that point.
I don't mean to, like take away from him, because I don't know him or anything other than just what you see online. And, like, he seems like he has a very cool persona. And I almost wonder if he's too cool for his own good in a lot of ways. Like, if you're not, you know, like, we've had this conversation on the Exhaust Notes podcast about Formula One drivers, right? And it's like, I look at athletes and think, hey, if you want this to be your career, you need to figure out how to be more than just an athlete. You have to figure out how to be successful in social settings, in the social media world, online, whatever it is. Like, it doesn't mean that you have to go do the things you don't want to do. But you got to do things that prove your humanity behind the scenes, right? Like, posing for cool pictures, if you're a good looking dude or a good looking girl or good looking they, them, it doesn't really matter. Like, everybody can do that. Like, I, you know, like, anybody can have a great photographer, make them look cool in a photo and then try to sell a product. But, like, we're beyond that time. If you want to be, unless you're Max Verstappen and you can completely dominate a sport for years in a row, then you're not going to be able to, like, maximize your potential until you embrace that side of things.
But even then, in Max Verstappen's case, Nick, I would say this, his dominance of the sport becomes his defining personality trait. So even if he wanted to do anything else, good or bad, and let's just say he's been on the wrong side of the ledger socially more often than not, people still give him that pass because of the fact that he is that dominant of a driver. The other thing is, I've kind of come around to this theory that I think this generation, and by generation, I mean the under 30 crowd, I think to a person, inherently a little bit more reserved than our generation was, because of the fact that they're the very first group of people that have lived their entire lives under social media. And so they've had to be a little bit more reserved because of the fact that they have the very real possibility of everything that they could possibly say, do, or act, or think could be used against them in the court of public law.
I 100% agree with that. However, my pushback would be, didn't Devin Booker date, like, a Kardashian or something when he was
Jenner? Yeah, he's already.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, absolutely right. Yep.
Same gene pool.
And, like, that's a choice, right? Like, you're dating somebody who literally lives their life on a TV show. Like, that's their...
She also
butter,
stops
right?
Riots by drinking Pepsi. Let's not forget that.
Exactly. I mean, hey, if you can't stop
hustle,
a riot drinking Pepsi, you know, like.
That's why I'm a Coca-Cola guy.
But I think with Devin Booker and, like, that, like, I think just sneakers in general, we're very much habitual in the way that we create, in the way that we process, in the way that we run timing on things, in the way that we market things, like, all of this conversation. I just think about, like, how far outside of the norm can we get? How far, like, when are we going to do things that are, like, actually pushing the envelope a little bit, you know,
when Jordans fell, and I don't mean to say it, like, in a negative way, but that's where the formula started, with the 1, 2, 3 for that every year we got something. And when that shoe fails, that's when they're going to stop doing that same formulaic way of, okay, I guess we got another one.
But I would argue that shoe has failed for sales wise. That shoe has not been a commercial success for a very long time compared to the Jordan wearing them years, right?
Yeah.
Like up until the 17, I don't think, I don't think anything after the 17, even the 23, which, I bought the 20s, almost all the 20s on sale. I love that shoe, and I bought them almost all on a discount. And they were crazy expensive, even at a discount. They were, back then, it was like I was paying like 120 or 140 for them.
Yeah.
And the 23 was like, okay, this could be the end. Time to celebrate, time to do something really nice. And then they continued it on. Nothing from, like, I love the 28. It's weird as hell, but it's like one of my favorite basketball shoes to play in.
Yeah.
But then they iterated on it with the 29 and made it like arguably the best basketball shoe ever.
That was the best basketball shoe ever.
And almost anybody that's played basketball in that shoe will tell you that's at least a top three shoe, period. Even compared to anything that comes out now, anything in the Kobe line, anything LeBron, that shoe is like universally like one of the best basketball shoes ever made, in my opinion. But that was another great time to stop, stop at the 30, now we're at like, we're just continuing
we're
on
at 39 like, now or something like that.
And I get that you're trying to pull the nostalgic side of it into the future and into the present. But ultimately, I just wonder, like, on a footwear industry sustainability question, do we need every person to continue on their signature shoe line as long as we have, or can we rethink the way this works? Because if I'm really into a player and really into his first shoe, her first shoe, then I might just stick with that. And I might just like throw it on my Adidas, throw it on Nike by you. Let me buy 30 of those because I fucking love that shoe. And then
no one does that.
I'm a super fan of that person. So if I have that ability to go down that rabbit hole, then it's like, well, I'm committed. I mean, you guys know, like D Rose, I probably have 100 pairs of D Rose shoes. Like, I absolutely love the first 3-4 shoes that they did. And then like, it kind of fell off, but I was still supporting because it was D Rose. And I'm like, man, this guy's going to come back from this injury and be, greatest of all time point guard. And, unfortunately it didn't work out that way, but I still think that like the legacy of his footwear with Adidas is going to be an interesting thing for them to revisit, like the way that they do the Kobe stuff on the Adidas side.
Puma does that with the MB01. Oh, they produce new ones, but they still produce, they never stopped producing the MB01.
But do you think that's almost a detriment now because there's that oversaturation of it? Because that's the one thing I always hear about Pumas is A, it's for kids, and B, there's too many of them.
The detriment is the colorways they put out, because the colorways are for literally my 11-year-old son. You won't typically see a grown individual wearing those so much. It's not something that translates well off the court because they're just too much. It's not like, oh, I got the What the Kobe, bright and colorful, but I can always go back to a normal Kobe,
And it's almost a shoe built. Yeah, I was going to say it's a shoe that's almost exclusively built for the AAU crowd, meaning.
Oh, 1,000,000%, crowd, I think.
That's a crowd that your number one job on that AAU court isn't even to win, it's to get noticed so you can get to bigger and better tournaments. So you can get noticed again and again and again.
Yeah. And I think that's so I agree with what you said, Mike. Like, I think, like, if they're going to continue on with the MB01, like, I think if they're continuing on with that line, they need to have both the plain Jane versions and the colorful versions. But I do think, exactly what you said, Rohit, I think that the strategy for Puma is much longer term than what they're selling right now. Yeah. If they can get a generation of kids into Pumas coming out of AAU and thinking about Pumas coming out of AAU, that's a much different approach than sell every pair we produce right now, right? And I don't know if time will tell if that's actually going to be a strategy that pays off. But I do think that, like, I want to believe that it's a conscious decision with the Puma Hoops team.
I hope so, because that's some great stuff. Like, their basketball shoes are great. Stewies, you got the Nitros.
In general, basketball performance is kind of at a very quiet reawakening where every brand is killing it on some aspect, shape, or form. It's just the fact that we don't have those headline stars that move numbers the way Kobe, LeBron, and KD did in their prime and in their pomp circumstance.
Yeah.
We need dominance that, like, of a young player winning. So still the same guys typically winning, or you got Jokic who isn't And no one.
And to your point, Mike, you need a Mahomes, and I don't want to be a homer, but
it makes sense.
Wow! Can't believe.
Listen,
you.
It's what I do. For every San Francisco Giant hat I see on this episode, I'm going to make at least the one for one Mahomes reference. But the one reason
there needs to be balance.
Yeah, there. And I think that's the other thing. It's like, from a marketing perspective, I wonder what Adam Silver would do to get a Mahomes-type figure, in the sense that he's a constant winner. He is polarizing, so either you love him or you hate him and his team. And he's the one that could usher in that type of consumer behavior that gets people from elementary school to middle school to high school to college. And you have definitive thoughts and attitudes, not only about Mahomes, but every single person in that league, because they have gone through the battle-tested lens of competing against him. And there becomes this natural order of hierarchy.
Isn't that Ant, though?
He can't win, though. They declined as soon as they restructured this year. I mean,
here's the thing, and this is where I'm the senior Mahomes expert on this. Mahomes' first year as a starter, he went to the Super Bowl and won it. That's the biggest thing that we are not used to seeing. Like, I was watching the old Fab Five documentary on 30 for 30, right? And there's that poignant coda at the end where they're talking about the fact that the true legacy of the Fab Five isn't the fact that they didn't win any championships. It's the fact that they altered the landscape of college and amateur athletics, because previously the freshman sensation was thought of as a one and done, in the sense of you only had one on your team. And even then you were kind of waiting to see glimpses of them because they didn't get the trust of the coach and the community to be put into that spectrum full time. But Michigan changed that dynamic and said, instead of one, let's give you all five.
What could do it? And I don't want to wish good on anything on this team, but if the Spurs somehow get Cooper Flagg paired up with Victor Wembanyama, they could be those two young stars who could alter the current hierarchy. If Cooper is what he seems to be, and we know what Victor can do already, but give him some more support. Jesus, I will not be able to live in my house during basketball season.
But Mike, you're a San Antonio Spurs fan. Would you get a property in San Antonio to be closer to the team?
Absolutely not. I refuse to move there because that team's there.
But I mean, like, that's an interesting idea. But like, as a basketball fan, are you going to see those two play versus LeBron and Luka? I hate the Lakers. I hate the Lakers. And I'm going to see LeBron and Luka play.
Oh, for sure. But these guys are getting older now. Like, we got LeBron maybe two more years before.
But Victor, even I know the Spurs are not winning, Mike. In all honesty, I've been not watching a lot of NBA because the Kings just should have never let go of De'Aaron Fox and Mike. I don't want to tear the.
You know what? We used to do episodes of Patreon. But we're just going to do one for Nick. Like, Nick, 30 minutes.
Grievance let out.
Lie down on a couch, and I will just turn play, and I will just give you 5-minute breaks for you to catch your thoughts. But go.
It's just all bleeped out.
Can you say anything we could put? Nope.
And this is going to be insensitive, but then at the end, it's just a single gunshot.
Shout out to Ja.
With a wink from Ja.
Throw a grenade.
But seriously, like, Victor is not going to get he's not going to bring the same appeal.
Big men don't sell shoes.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Mahomes won in his rookie year. Like, nobody in the NBA is going to win in their rookie year and be the dominant force on the team. That's just not going to happen in that way. Like, the NBA is still a level up from college on a lot of levels. So, but I do think that it's interesting to think about, like, what the next young talent is. I know that Minnesota has fallen off from, like, where they were, but I still think that Ant is like, hands down the most exciting thing in the league.
Even
with Ja on the court, like, I don't know. I just don't think you can. I think fans, especially young fans, just don't trust that Ja is going to keep his shit together and be on the court long enough for them
shallow basis. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go for it, man.
No, I was going to say, I don't think anybody thinks he's going to keep it together.
I'm just going to say this. On a very shallow basis, Ja also hasn't captured the zeitgeist the way Anthony Edwards has. It's one thing, to your point, Nick, of he's not been playing as frequently as Ant has, but even when he does play, dare I say, he's not matching Ant for athleticism or excitability. And, like, that's the other issue.
Yeah, I agree.
Dunk contest. Let's let those two dunk it out over All-Star break, and then we'll solve all our problems about everybody.
I'm still saying, man. Make Ja push
That's a whole interesting topic, right? Like, I I really do wonder if the NBA will ever have stars the way we had stars in the 90s.
They got to put a cash prize up. Everybody's gotten so, like, like, I mean, I think everybody's going to get
And
hurt.
I don't know why the footwear brands don't put that cash prize up. Like, if I'm a player and, like, there's a deal on the table with a brand, or every brand comes in and says, okay, if our player wins, we'll throw him X amount of money. Like, it makes it interesting. Yeah. I'm also completely against gambling and, you know, gambling advertisements on this podcast.
It's just like
so, like, I kind of am against that in a way. But
put in a contract. It's just like a perk. Just like with anything, like NFL is always the best, like, barometer for this. It's like, you make this team or you make this level, we're going to give you this bonus. Put it as a bonus. Like, hey, you're a rookie. You can dunk or whatever. If you do any all-star activity or you get nominated for any all-star activity and you win, here's a bonus. And if they put that into the contract, you're going to draw in more people to actually do it, because although he was cool to watch, I don't know why his name escapes me now, but yeah, we don't watch the NBA dunk contest for a G League player. No disrespect to him, because he's clearly an amazing dunker, but I mean,
if it's just a dunk contest, then let the whole world in, right? Like, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know if
that's the case. If it's just a dunk contest,
just go through like the team Flight Brothers, you know, Instagram or YouTube.
It's very,
and you'll see
selective gatekeeping. And to your point, sports is meant to be inclusive, Nick. And I don't know why they do this. I know why we do this, for that sweet, sweet podcast money.
Man, if anybody wants to throw us some sweet, sweet podcast money, let us know.
For any beard and mustache oil groups out there who want to sponsor this podcast, me and Roy, we're model for you. We're such handsome individuals. We could do this.
I mean, I need to shave. We could go for like a shaver. Oh,
we're basically Bulbasaur, Ivysaur, and Venusaur facial hair.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll just do the whole...
Before, middle, after...
And then you get darker with more facial hair. That's the other connotation.
Huh, I get a tan as I grow this hair out.
Oh, man.
End it now. Yeah, otherwise, I'm going to be like, Ja.
All right, guys. Well, let the folks know how they can find you outside of the show.
Yep. Always find me here. Oh, go ahead, Roy.
No, I was going to say, I don't know why I'm so eager to jump the gun. Bad job, pun. You can find me on Instagram, Blue Sky, at RoatM13. You can join me and Mike as a part of the Mustachio Mafia. Mike, where can they follow you?
You can find me here at Sneaker History, of course. Always find me. Instagram, MadWatcher789, all those other platforms as well, I think. Then YouTube, just Mike Guillory.
Right on. I'm at Nick Engvall on all the platforms. Most importantly, follow at Sneaker History. We haven't been posting enough, but I'm about to get back on that. And also, if you listen to the other episode of the podcast, the last couple episodes of the podcast, I tried a couple of different formats. So let us know what you think of those. I would love to hear from y'all. And hopefully we see you in the Discord. Thanks for watching, listening.
Yes, right. We'll take reviews, please.
We're almost to 200 reviews. We have 199. So whoever leaves us number 200, I'll send you a t-shirt or a coffee mug or something.
200 interview, we'll give you 3 minutes to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about on a future episode.
90 seconds. I'm giving 90 seconds. I'm going to get wild.
200 seconds. 3 minutes.
All right, y'all, we appreciate you. We'll catch you in the next one. Peace. Could you imagine, like,
hey y'all, Nick here. One more thing before you take off: do us a solid and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Check the links in the description to help us keep the show going. And as always, we appreciate you listening, and don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Peace.